Coming up on This Week in Radio Tech, an all-star cast. We've got Ted Randall. He knows both sides of the microphone. Holly Mislin, IT expert. And David Bialik has been putting together another broadcast and streaming track for this next AES. It's all coming right up. This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Axia and the family of Axia X-Nodes. Upgrade to X-Node 2.0 for free and get mixing, routing, and more. By Direct Current, broadcast e-newsletter. Get Direct Current in your inbox every Thursday. And by Lavo and the Crystal Clear Virtual Radio Console. Crystal Clear is the console with a multi-touch touchscreen interface. Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack, your host. Delighted that you're here. This is the show where we talk about everything from this golden microphone to the light bulb at the top of the tower and lots of stuff in between. And today we've got three treats. Okay. We've got Chris Tobin with us, and he'll have his usual wisdom, and he always says things that are just absolutely gem, worth writing down. And then we're going to have actually four treats, because we've got Ted Randall and Holly Mislin with us. And you may have heard of Ted. You may not have heard of Holly, but they have helped me so much in my engineering career. They don't even know how much. They've gotten me out of bind so many times. Good to have friends like Ted and Holly. And then we're going to hear from David Bialik about the AES convention that's coming up in Los Angeles in 1 month from now. So that's a preview of what's coming up on the show. I'm excited about it because we always have a laugh with Ted and Holly. And Chris Tobin's, hey, Chris, come on in. Is Chris Tobin there?
I'm here, yes.
Hey, some undisclosed location with your tort mic flag?
Well, of course. This is the proper way to do television, I'm told. Or is it television, really? It's Wonkavision.
I need to get a mic flag. I got one somewhere, and I never... You do such a great job on that tort mic flag. You put some work into it, and here I am being a slacker.
That's quite all right. You're operating from home. That's okay. I'm on location. I'm in a voice booth. One of the lights just blew out, so it's a little bit of shadows, but... That's all right. It's how things go.
If you'd sell those mic flags online, I'd buy one.
Ah, is that so?
Yeah, I would, sure.
And the company that made them will be like, what are you doing?
Ted and Holly Mislin are going to join us here in just a minute. I'm going to introduce you to them in a minute. Hang on. First, we're going to get to our first sponsor, and that is the Axia. The folks at Axia make this product that, you know, it's one of these things that you just kind of take for granted, but it does so much stuff. And you know what I'm talking about? I'm talking about the Axia X node. I got one right here. Here we go. The Axia X node. Thanks, Axia, for sponsoring our show. The Axia X node, this is the box, the device, the thing you use to convert between live wire and analog. Or AES EBU digital, or microphone level. And here's the back of it. Each one of these has four stereo inputs and four stereo outputs. It's got two jacks for the network. They can both be live wire, or one can be live wire and one for a management network. And you can even feed it power over Ethernet. You can power this thing with PoE or with, as they call it, shore power, AC power. And that way you've got dual redundant power on these things. Now, this is how you get great sounding audio into and out of the network. But also, let me give you an idea here. An X node can generate several different types of streams. Of course, it does live wire streams, and those are the live wire live stream, very low latency, a lot of bandwidth, but very low latency. The standard stream comes out of here or comes into it. That's got more latency, but it's easier to handle for certain things that aren't maybe live wire qualified. And then it'll also do AES-67 and Ravenna. It'll create and receive those streams, AES-67 and Ravenna. It'll also create and receive just a plain RTP, real-time protocol stream. So it does all these. Oh, it'll even do surround sound streams. It takes up more channels, but you can do synced together surround sound streams. It does so much, this box, and it's easy to set up too. If you want to set it up easily, you can actually do it just from the front panel. Now, if you want to give it, give things specific names, friendly names, you can do that too by browsing into it. It's got a web server in there, so you browse right into it. Now, what can you do with it? You know, I've been talking about making IP radio STLs. Well, this can be the basis of your IP radio STL. You can run audio into it, AES or EBU, AES or analog, I should say, into it. Create a live wire stream or an RTP stream or an AES-67 stream. And from that, go over an IP radio link. Or if you've got really super good internet, you could certainly do an RTP stream. RTP doesn't have to have clock at both ends. It's kind of self-clocking. And use that as your STL. That's what I'm doing at two different facilities in Mississippi, where I'm sending four radio stations on one of these. You know, instead of buying four codecs for a lot of money, of course, I would have bought Telos codecs, of course, but this has a list price of about $1,600, $1,600, $1,700, something like that. And you can get four stereo streams in each direction. There's one more thing that this does. By the way, I'll show you a couple more here. We also have this is the GPIO node. So this one gives you contact closures in and out. You can route them anywhere through the system. You can talk to IP audio drivers. You can talk to software. You can talk to button panels. You can talk to the Pathfinder software with that. And then, oh, look at this one. This is for you television guys. This is an SDI X node. So you can put SDI video audio into one of these. And then you can break out the audio, mix it around, change channels, do what you want, bring it out live wire, process it, bring it back in, re-embed it. You can delay the video as long as the audio got delayed, so they're still matched up. The delay is built in. You can adjust it. And so this is two SDI channels, in and out, and break out your audio. And, again, shuffle the channels if you need to. And one more thing comes in the size of box, and that is this is the Ethernet switch, the AXE Ethernet switch, called the X switch. And it's amazing, too. It's got four PoE ports. You can run telephones and other PoE devices from it. You can even run some of these X nodes from this switch, the X switch. The whole X node family, thanks for sponsoring this week in Radio Tech. Lots of uses, including the basis for your new STL or leg. We use these to get the Cleveland Symphony Orchestra from their symphony hall back to the radio station. In Cleveland, where they're on the air. Just amazing. Thanks, Axie, for sponsoring this week in Radio Tech. All right, without further ado, let's bring in our guests. Let's see if they're there. Ted Randall and Holly Mislin. Hello. There you are. How are you guys?
Pretty good. How are you doing, Kirk?
Good. I know I caught you guys on short notice, and so you didn't get a chance to set up a mic in your usual studio. I want to introduce people to Ted real quick. Ted, you do a show called the QSO Radio Show. Give me the spiel on that. What's that about?
Well, it's a show about ham radio. Been doing that for about, 10, 11 years now. And we feature just different hams, people all over the country that tell stories about what they're doing. I don't care if it's a radio teletype to a balloon launch to paranormal, using ham gear for investigating paranormal stuff. Everything you can think of, DX, people working DX, and then a lot of broadcast engineers that are in ham radio. We've been doing that, like I said, for about 10, 11 years. We usually do broadcasting from, about the 7, 8 years now, from the Dayton Hamvention and the Huntsville Hamfest, and we do a live broadcast on Field Day, all on shortwave. And, of course, there are podcasts up, but we like to encourage people to listen over the airwaves, because that's where we had a person standing in back of us here just a second ago, and that's our friend. Well, there he is. He's not standing, he's sitting. Gary Brown has joined us here, so you may want to give him a formal introduction or something. Whatever you do, Kurt.
You know, we need to have a whole show with Gary on. As you guys are on for about half of this show, and I appreciate you taking some time out on very short notice to be with us. Maybe we can get you on for the whole show coming up in the future. In fact, I'd love to somehow combine TWRT with your QSO radio show. Maybe somehow do them, I don't know. We'll figure out something to do. Because that QSO show, I want to spend another minute on that. You have literally tens of thousands of listeners on that show. Why is it so popular?
I think, the whole deal is that it's on shortwave. And I think the problem lies with people not understanding how many people actually listen to shortwave. Especially communications freaks, people who are into radio, the bare bones heart of radio. Let me give you an example here. Back, I don't know, years ago, there was a fellow on the Voice of America. His name was Willis Conover. He did a jazz show. And the BBC estimated his audience at 30 million.
Oh, now, that was
when shortwave radios all had tubes in them, and they sat on tops and took up an entire desktop. Well, today, shortwave radios are the size of your cell phone, and some even smaller. And some of them, if you try to hook an antenna to them, you overload their front end. They are so hot. So you can take a handheld shortwave radio, literally, and pick up our radio station, WTWW. You can hear that thing in Asia, China, Africa, just about everywhere. So, and I think that accounts for it. In other words, there's so many of these radios that have flooded the market that, you know, it's created thousands and thousands and thousands of new listeners. And on top of that, a lot of folks would say that when Willis Conover was on, that was when shortwave was in its heyday. I think today is the heyday for shortwave because
really?
There are more
really?
Receivers on the planet than ever before. So when some of these governments are curtailing their broadcasting, that's just great because that means all those folks just come over to us. And every night we are on with oldies and country and requests, and we take in information from hams or any if they've got anything in regards to their clubs or organizations, the ARRL, and we just have a lot of fun every night. It's a party on shortwave.
So you do a news show every Tuesday evening at 8 p.m. U.S. Central Time?
Well, it's a live show.
Yeah, you do a live.
Okay, the QSO is heard on Saturdays at 1 p.m. and then at 7 p.m. at night on 9475 during the day and 5085 at night. But then Monday through Friday, we do a live music show starting at 9 p.m. and going till about midnight. And that thing is just chock full of people, hams that are calling in and emailing and shortwave listeners, and it's quite extensive. You can get 600 emails in an evening real easy. But there's a lot of people on shortwave radio, and I think the reason why is because there is some boredom with AM and FM at this point.
Hey, if people want to see more about that, looks like tedrandall.com will get you to the page for the QSO radio show. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay, we'll put that in the show notes. Now, let's switch our attention from the QSO radio show just to broadcast engineering and IT. And I want to say hi to Holly Mislin there. Holly has you have really helped me out a few times, Holly, when I was in a jam in the IT world, and I really appreciate it. And I just feel like I haven't thanked you enough. I remember one time I bought a Dell computer, and apparently it was used, and the retailer didn't know that. And I needed to make it as if it was factory fresh. And you talked me through a few interesting keystrokes, and bam, it became factory fresh. And that was like 8 years ago, and I really appreciate that. Holly, what else do you do in the IT world in relation to broadcasting?
Well, I work with anything that's on a computer. We've got Axia here, so we have audio going through computers, anything in the studios, the boards, the microphones, and then I go with Ted out to the tower and help out there. But pretty much anything with networking, which all the satellite receivers are networked now, and there's so many things, you know, doing audio over IP, so I deal with that. And we have a whole rack room of computers and gear that go through our network.
So Ted or Holly, whoever wants to answer this, what really has your attention nowadays in broadcast engineering? Because you guys engineer for a couple of stations right here in Nashville, and you're involved with some smaller stations as well. And it's just every time I turn around, you're doing something. You guys are really, really involved. What's got your attention in broadcast engineering right now?
Well, we're kind of a broadcast family. My older son, David, takes care of IT and video and radio at Trevecca Nazarene University, and then my younger son, Matt, is chief engineer for the Dave Ramsey Show. So we're kind of a broadcast family, I guess, let's say. I would say right now the common denominator that we see as a challenge in radio is one word, and that's training. It seems to me that radio station owners and managers alike are remiss in making sure that employees and new hires you know, get training. Now, there used to be these things called broadcasting schools. I don't know, do you ever remember broadcasting schools, Kirk? Was that during your time frame when you were a younger person?
I remember seeing ads for them, but I never went to one. Chris Tobin's with us as well. Chris, in your area in the northeast of the U.S., did you have broadcasting schools?
Yes, Connecticut School of Broadcasting, CSB, was quite popular. Yeah, they had them for years. Yeah, yeah. Training is definitely an issue, or lack thereof, I guess. That would be the way to put it.
So, Ted, what about now? No broadcasting schools.
I'm not aware of any. There was one here in Nashville, and they had, I don't know how many students enrolled, and they just basically shut down right in the middle of everything. But the broadcasting schools, for folks that say, what is that? I never went to one. Matter of fact, I went to IBA in the Detroit area and signed up for their engineering class, and the instructor quit, and then they asked me to take the class over and teach it, which was, I thought, well, boy, that's a good one for you. But what they used to do is they'd teach young people how to talk into a microphone. They teach them how to cue records, how to operate a board. What does it mean when you throw the pot down in cue? What's the difference between cue and audition? What are the different buses? You know, and I know Belmont University here has a real big program when it comes to teaching young people studio operations for like recording studios. But today, look at what we've got. We have got a complex series of things like LiveWire. We have radio automation systems. We have just all kinds of things that we never had back in those days of the broadcasting schools. And the broadcasting schools were teaching really, really basic stuff to young people. But when they walked into a facility, they weren't walking in blind. They actually had some training in the basic areas. Today, that doesn't exist. So a lot of young people walk into a radio station off the street. And, I can just tell you, engineers across the country, and I hear it from a lot of different engineers, that they take telephone calls at 2 o'clock in the morning because the board op doesn't know that the program switch isn't in. Or, you know, I remember one time in particular, a program director calling on the phone for us, and the guy was just screaming obscenities because he couldn't get a particular sports game to come in. And all the world it was the young guy running the board had not been trained, and he was trying to dial a Detroit phone number, and he was punching the number in on the extreme, and then pushing the auto dial button. Okay, so it was auto dialing somewhere else. They couldn't get it to work, but only, you know, an hour or two of training or shadowing or something like that could have solved all of that problem. But it's not done anymore. But somebody, somewhere, somehow, needs to institute a standardization of training people to come into the broadcast facility. Because I don't, it's not fair to the young people either that come in and they don't, you know, that they. But where can they go? There's nobody doing it at this point. So, Kirk, are you going to start a broadcasting school?
We do right here every week on TWRT. And you know what? Maybe we should do some things that you would teach in school. And if it's, you know, how to use an IP codec or an ISDN codec, maybe that's the kind of thing that we need to teach. We have taught some things about AM and FM theory and digital theory and, you know, some practical stuff, but there's stuff that we haven't. We've got 300 episodes. Maybe we could just make all your new hires watch 300 episodes of TWRT. You think? No, they might run.
it'd probably be a worthwhile venture, but I mean, that's something to think about because we have video now. When I was younger, there was no video as we have it today for training purposes. But training, I think it's everything. I think it's the ultimate success to the mechanical side of the broadcast facility, because if people don't know how to punch the numbers into a codec, if they don't know what bit rate means, and they don't know what AES out means, and they're working with this stuff, and they're going out and doing remotes and all those kind of things, you know, they walk in cold to this. Our success rate as the broadcast facility goes down, and of course there's a lot more mistakes and a lot of problems with broadcasts not getting on the air. So, but that's my, I guess I want to say my soapbox for today is is training.
You know, I see, Ted, I see you and Holly at the SBE meetings here in Nashville, and I know you've got a number of, let's call them soapbox subjects that you like to talk about. I think maybe Nielsen has been one of them. Overprocessing, maybe another one. And tell you what, let's talk about processing, because I know that's a subject that you really enjoy. You've got a lot of good thoughts about processing. And let's say that I'm a new engineer and you're wanting to explain, you know, what I need to be trained, what do I need to listen for when I'm setting up processing? What do you listen for? What's good audio to you?
Well, I guess the first criteria is, what are you listening on? I mean, I've seen audio processors demonstrated on pint-sized speakers in a big room, to where if the thing had the ability to create a symphonic hall right in front of you, you'd never know it, because we're listening over some little teapot speakers. You know, I think the first thing, as far as audio processing is concerned, is to have a listening area, a listening facility, listening equipment that's designed to reproduce something and possibly even over-exaggerate the frequency response of what you're listening to, so that you can pick up on the minute distortions and things. Because, you know, it's a known fact that, like, for example, women are far more sensitive in the high-frequency areas than men are. So what sounds good to me, you know, might wind up giving some female a migraine headache. And I think these are lost things too. I don't think we pay much attention to that. I think the broadcast plant ought to have a real good set of audiophile loudspeakers somewhere, you know, in the rack room or someplace at the point of entry where your signal's going out, so that you can hear exactly what's going out and also be able to switch to the air and hear what's being transmitted. And I see guys trying to adjust audio with a pair of cost headphones, and it's like, what is that all about? You know, I mean, you can't do it. It's like trying to use a pair of tweezers to change a tire on an automobile. You know,
Ted, I think that's a good analogy. There's a brand of speakers that you really love, and I did not know about these until I met you. And I still haven't heard. You've invited me to your house to hear these speakers. I got to take you up on that. Tell me what you're talking about here with these amazing speakers.
Well, I guess I want to say I'm ADD. There's a number of speakers I like. I wouldn't say those are my favorites. I would say they're my choice if I'm wanting to show somebody what Nielsen tones actually sound like.
Okay. We're not to keep a secret. Sorry, go ahead. Oh, we're talking about the Dahlquist, right?
Dahlquist DQ10s, but there's also things like, I mean, these are all vintage speakers. These are old speakers like me, okay? I'm talking about Acoustats, you know, the 2 plus 2s, 3 panels, the 4 panels. The Snell Type A's are a good set of speakers that you can listen on. But something that's going to give you some detail, and as an example, we had a meeting here in the Nashville area, and some folks came in from Nielsen, and I had a pair of DQ10s on the stage. And we played back their audio through their encoder, and these two fellas sitting there were horrified. They had no idea how bad it sounded, okay? But, once again, what are they listening on? They talked about they had a golden ear. I don't know who a golden ear is, but golden ear can't hear any more than I can if he's listening on a pair of teapot speakers. And that's my take on it. But the Dahlquist TQ10s, believe it or not, you can get them on eBay for $500, $600 a pair. Originally, I think they were close to $2,000 a pair, and if you compare them to what's out there today, they'll blow your mind. I mean, they're really incredible. They have a little piezoelectric tweeter in these things that goes up to 40 kilohertz. If you can hear that far off, you can, you know, your dogs, you know, enjoy DQ10s because they're so high. You know?
And I'm just not into that world of amazing speakers like that. Chris Tobin, do you have any of these at stations you work with? The Snells, the Dahlquist, or the Acoustats?
Not those particular ones, but I do have a set of speakers I work at a station with, Bowers and Wilkins, the B&Ws.
Oh, yeah.
Very, very popular. Lots of Genelecs, plenty of those. And what was the, oh, the Adams, Adams 7s, I think, is the speakers I've seen a lot of lately. Room acoustics helps to play part as well. Just not just a good speaker, but room acoustics are, have to be considered when you're doing it. And it's very handy.
Ted, what do you have to say about room acoustics in the listening room?
Most of the time, we've never really been fortunate enough to be able to control room acoustics. I'm just thankful to have, you know, a pair of speakers that will faithfully reproduce. But he was mentioning B&Ws. I saw a pair of B&Ws I literally fell in love with that I like better even than the Acoustats and the Snells and all those. But the price tag on them, I think, was like $18,000 a pair, you know. And
that's about right.
Yeah, you have to mortgage your house to take a pair of those home. But they really, really sounded sweet.
Wow. Ted, we're gonna draw this interview to a close here pretty soon. I really wanted to get you on because we've been talking about having you and Holly on for a long time. At least we got you on for a few minutes here. And I want folks, the folks who listen to TWRT and watch TWRT, to know about your QSO radio show. And they can find out more about that at tedrandall.com. I'll put that link in the show notes. And it's an amazing show. You got a ton of listeners. You always get great response to your ads and the you know places that you point your listeners to. I appreciate your hard work on that show.
Yeah, Kirk, we just want to know, when are you going to join us on the QSO radio show?
As long as, you know, I don't have to say something really smart anytime. I'll come on a rag trip with you.
Well, the thing of it is that there's no political correctness allowed on that show, so just so you know in advance.
Okay, all right.
I don't have any political capital to be on the show either.
And when's the next time you guys are taking that show on the road? Will it be next Dayton or somewhere sooner than that?
I don't know. I guess it would be, yeah, it probably would be Dayton because we don't really do a whole lot of live stuff. We just do Dayton, Huntsville, and we do a broadcast on Field Day. So
yeah.
Those are the basic three times of the year.
Probably Dayton.
Now, Dayton, of course, is the greatest place in the world to find transmitter parts.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Wow. All right, guys. I know you took an hour out of your busy day, and I appreciate you setting up and being with me. I know you got a lot to do there at those stations that you're at. So we'll have you on next time. I'd love to go, Ted, I need to go out to a transmitter site with you and just do a little video interview and show around because you've got some couple transmitter sites that are way out in the boonies. One call, I think, Cumberland Furnace?
Yeah, we got Cumberland Furnace and also Eagleville. It'd be an interesting trip. And we're running, of course, vintage Energy Onyx transmitters, which, incidentally, we've got two... two sites with those transmitters that the transmitters have not gone down in what?
6 years.
About 6 years. They've been up constant for 6 years, which is quite unheard of. But we also have a shortwave transmitter site with some big transmitters. You might get a bang out of doing a video of that place.
Gotcha. Hey, my producers tell me we have got to jet. Ted, Holly, thanks so much for being with us, and we'll get you on full time. We should do the show from your studio, maybe. That would be cool.
Okay. Cool.
All right. Ted Randall, Holly Mislin. Ted does engineering, does a radio show. Holly works with him. She does IT work, and they have become dear friends of mine over the years. Thanks a lot for being with us, you guys. Appreciate you.
Thank you.
Okay,
thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
All right. Hey, you're watching This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack along with Chris Tobin. Chris, we got to jet real quick and hear from our sponsor, Direct Current, which is a newsletter from the folks at the Telos Alliance. And then we'll be right back to have a couple more things coming up. And David Bialik on the way. Stay tuned.
Not much in the paper today, is there?
Yeah, not much. Seems tough to stay informed, you know?
Like we're missing out on stuff, important stuff.
Yeah, feels like week-old news. Yesterday's stories. Half the tech stuff in here seems out of date by the time I see it.
What Kirk doesn't know is I'm way ahead of everyone else around here. Every Thursday, I get this newsletter in my email. It's Direct Current. The folks at the Telos Alliance publish this.
What Joe doesn't know is I keep one step ahead of the radio guys in this market. Every Thursday, I get direct current from the folks at the Telos Alliance. It's a free newsletter about radio engineering, audio, streaming, studios, everything.
Thursday afternoons, we have our department head meeting. I look like a genius, thanks to the knowledge, updates, and advice in Direct Current. Sometimes I wonder if I should tell Kirk about Direct Current. Might help him out.
I wonder if I should let Joe in on my secret. He could use a little help sometimes.
Get Direct Current in your inbox every Thursday. Read profiles of engineers and newsmakers in the broadcast community. Get technical pointers putting you and your facility at an advantage. Important industry news and views. Plus, you'll be up to date on Telos Omnia Axia and ZipStream products. It's all here in the Direct Current newsletter. Subscribe online at telosalliance.com/directcurrent. That's telosalliance.com/directcurrent.
You're watching and listening to This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack along with Chris Tobin. Chris, welcome in. And, you know, we wanted to get to Ted and Holly right away, so I didn't really get to say a bunch of hello to you. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well. Doing good. And you know, Ted was right about the training. Definitely something that would be very handy. But you know what the sad part is? The business of broadcasting has become so, how do I put it? Bottom backwards, that is. Because of the fact that people have just lost sight of what it means to do business in general, just general business practice.
I think about
hiring an engineering person or a technical person. Most managers of stations, radio stations today, they don't even consider the ramifications of hiring someone that doesn't know what's going on. I mean, I worked at a place where they would hire people to work on equipment, and you'd ask them, did you ever work in this business before? No. Oh, okay. Just checking. Because you're now working on a 50,000-watt transmitter that bills about $60 million a year. But that's okay. Just checking.
And I know that the stations, or some of the stations that Ted and Holly work with, they're very, very, very active in what they do. They have a lot going on, a lot of live broadcasting, and they seem to have a lot of fresh, young faces who are enthusiastic, but... you know, don't have the experience, and it's tough. And I'm not in any way putting them down. On the one hand, they're giving opportunities to new faces, to people who want to be in the broadcasting business. On the other hand, it's trial by fire, man. It's tough.
Oh, it is. Yeah, it's not easy. Definitely, it is not. Sadly, a lot of the business models don't encourage apprenticeships, if you will. You know, people coming up through the ranks, mentors. There are not many. I mean, I know when I got into the business, heck. I was blessed with the fact that I met a few, as amateur operators know, Elmers. I made a lot of folks who were willing to tell me about things and explain to me why things are what they are, and to read the old stuff. I mean, I have five books that are out of print at home that are reference books. They're NAB handbooks, and in them they actually explain how to equalize phone lines with the 111C coils. They talk about how to bias a transmitter for tubes for the PA cavity, various techniques for Klystron transmitters. That a friend of mine who's maintained UHF transmitters all his life was telling me secrets about how to keep it from exploding, and that's in the book. And the copyright of the book is 1948. these are things you can't even get your hands on anymore, and to learn it, to understand it, it's impossible. And I just the other day was working with a friend of mine at a station. And he had some new folks on his staff, and they were asking me, like, why are you doing that setup in that studio in that fashion? I'm like, well, here's why. And we were doing a remote broadcast over the weekend. I got called in to help out a friend who's been somewhat ill. And, they're setting up this position for a talk show for the remote location in a restaurant. And I asked the intern/part-time worker, I said, why are you setting up your guest position here? And not over on the other side of the table. And he goes, well, I want to have the guests be able to meet the audience, people as they come up to see him, because he's a famous sports person. I said, right. However, you're bringing them through the restaurant where the tables are. I said, that's going to disrupt the business at hand. And the reason you're here as part of the broadcast is to generate business for the restaurant. I said, you might want to consider the other side of the table, which is toward the lobby, where people are accustomed to waiting and moving around and expect to be shuffled about. Thank goodness we did that, because a line did form for the autographs for the sports figure.
Yeah.
But these are things nobody's taught anymore. No one's explaining. Yeah, you know, this is an engineering person or, you know, technical person who's been given the responsibility of doing technically sets. That was marketing, outside communications, as well as the engineering setup of the broadcast. Yeah, you know, I laughed. A friend of mine looked at me and was like, well, you know, what's wrong with the setup? I was like, first of all, what's wrong with the setup? Whoever the general managers of this radio station should be taken out and flogged. Because first of all, the person who's doing the work isn't even wearing a shirt that represents the station. He's actually wearing a shirt that represents the competitor in town. So nobody paid attention on that one. Oh, yeah, that was a good one. And then the other thing was there was nobody from sales or marketing to make sure that the imaging of the station was being presented and the client was being served properly. You know, it's just amazing the things we take for granted. And the best part is the person learning, you know, okay, this up-and-coming individual, when I asked him, I said, do you have any issues wearing a competing T-shirt? And he goes, well, it's not competition. It's a different radio station. I was like, do you understand the word competition, and do you understand what that means? And he looked at me. He's like, well, no, it's a CBS station. This is a sports station. I said, that's right, but the CBS station you're wearing happens to be a sports station in town. So, but he goes, yeah, but that's across town, another part of the county. I said, okay. And I just realized that most young people who are not paying attention to anything other than their squirrel phone, that's what I call these things now, these are squirrel phones. It may appear to be an iPhone, but it's actually a squirrel phone. Nobody's paying attention. The word competition, hello. And I just sat there for an hour and a half watching this event take place, and I'm like, you know, if I had done the exact same thing this person was empowered to do 20 years ago when I got into the business, and I thank goodness I had people mentoring me, I would have been out of a job, or I would have been made embarrassed by the staff after the fact. I worked with a program director that would call me up and say, I just saw a picture of one of the of our events. Why was the banner where it was? And I thought we made arrangements about where to place the microphones so the mic flags would be visible when a camera is being shot for newspaper ads. It's like, I tried to do that, but the person that was in charge of the event said otherwise. That you don't have that anymore. I guarantee you, people watching us right now, listening to this podcast, I guarantee you, 9 out of 10 people listening and watching will say, wow, you're absolutely right. I don't think we've ever had a marketing, sales, or anybody of interest at our events. And how many times you as the engineer or technician have been left responsible to do more than just set up the microphone, make sure the connection's working? You know? And then you have the other side of the coin. Yeah. You know, again, lack of training. Now that everything is so easily obtainable by this little sliver of electronics, this on-processing device, everybody assumes that, hey, I've got an LTE connection. I can make it work. I can do a broadcast. Doesn't matter. I was like, I beg to differ. And then you have the, well, I could do Wi-Fi through my LTE Wi-Fi and do everything else. No, it doesn't work that well. I can tell you for a fact, because I just did an event 2 weeks ago over a weekend and watched somebody collapse completely trying to do that setup, Wi-Fi to Wi-Fi back to the station. And they're like, I don't understand why there's dropouts. I was like, oh, we could go with the principles of RF transmission, or we could go with the principles of RF congestion. I said, which would you like to go with first? So it's all part of training. It's all part of training. I mean, yes, it's baptism by fire. Yes, it's understanding why it happens. But, you know, nobody is willing to say, okay, I failed. Why did I fail? You know, dissect it. How many times, I'm sure you've done stuff, right? You've been at a transmitter site and you hit a switch or you do something and all of a sudden, boom. Like, wow, that hurt a lot. Now, what did I do wrong and why would that happen? You would investigate and make sure you wouldn't do it again. I guarantee you there are people in the audience who would probably do it 2 or 3 times before they give up and walk away. It's the times we live in, I guess.
It is. And you mentioned about trying to do a live remote broadcast with Wi-Fi and a MiFi using 4G LTE, and you said it fell apart. There were dropouts. Didn't work perfectly, and that might lead a lot of people to say, oh well, that technology is no good.
Yep.
Well, that technology can be good. People do live HD video over cellular carriers, but they're using 3, 4, 5, 8 data modems on several different carriers at the same time to assure that somewhere, somehow, we're going to try to get, you know, 2 or 3 megabits per second of data through and aggregate that. So, I mean, there are ways to use the technology, right?
Yes, and I can tell you for a fact that a friend of mine, again, he's been asking for my help on the weekends because he's just been a little behind with his health. I actually did 2 video broadcasts for him, and it's using one of those popular products for CDN and a video switcher on a laptop, and it's a two-thirds imaging, it's a nice Sony camera, HDMI out. And his setup was laptop, a small little box that the camera plugged into, and that box would then convert the video to H.264 and then feed it into the laptop for the software to process as a part of a remote input. And then he'd send the stream out from the laptop to the CDN and off to their website. And I looked at him, I said, are you using Wi-Fi for this connection for the camera to the laptop? He's like, well, yeah, we do the MiFi Wi-Fi, so we can connect all the devices to the same subnet, and then the LTE goes out to the CDN, you know, it's the internet. But, you know, we have to run it at a very low bit rate. I was like, why? Well, because the LTE doesn't have the bandwidth. I said, really? I said, you sure you got this right? And he looked at me, he's like, what are you talking about? I said, I'm using my LTE right now with my little cradle point router, and I'm getting 14 megabits down, and I'm getting 12, 13 megabits up. And I said,
yeah,
that's more than enough to do a nice 1.5 megabit video, you know, HD. What we discovered, and I knew it was going to be the case, but I just wanted to go through the exercise with him, was remember what Wi-Fi is. It's a transmitter-receiver system, right? Mm-hmm. It's also a data rate that's aggregated across several carriers. So if you're going to start doing, you know, the Wi-Fi to a box that converts a video to a compressed video format to be handed to a laptop that's then going to take that same thing and send it back out through its Wi-Fi connection back to the MiFi, which is going off to the internet, what have you done? You've encoded, decoded four times. That's just the one Wi-Fi connection. We're not even talking about this.
Yeah.
Then you have a laptop that has to do the processing of the video, the switching. Oh, and by the way, run the Wi-Fi modem, and all of a sudden, your CPU processing. Oddly enough, for two of the broadcasts he did before I came into the show, he was averaging 92% CPU usage. This weekend, we did two shows, and I didn't hit anything above 42%. Difference? I took the Cradlepoint router, connected all the devices through the Ethernet wired connections, and then used the Cradlepoint router's USB port for the Pantech modem. And oddly enough, we were actually streaming 2.5 megabits of video to their CDN, and the first time in weeks, the broadcast actually looked like HD. Didn't change any of the equipment.
Yeah.
All we did was change the interlinking. But
sure.
He was like, but LTE, how do you know when LTE is this or that? I said, well, you could use the MiFi about screen to tell you what the signal strength is.
Yeah.
But you have to understand what to read, because remember, LTE is not the same as our traditional old analog cellular. Mm-hmm. So LTE, there are two parameters you got to remember. It's the RSSI, Relative Signal Strength Indicator, which basically tells you the overall carrier strength, which is anywhere from, you know, minus 110 dBm up to minus 55 dBm. But then there's the other indicator, which is the signal interfering signal noise ratio, the SINR, S-I-N-R. That number is read in positive dB numbers. So if you have a RSSI, say, of minus 65 dBm, you'd be like, wow, it's a great carrier. Yes. However, if the SINR is anything less than 12 dB, maybe 13 is, I think, the low end on LTE, you will not get the resources you need to get the data rate through. Look it up. It's part of the spec. It's part of the 3GPP spec. I'm not speaking out of school.
Yeah.
The two broadcasts I did this weekend with him, both times we had a minus 52 dBm, and our SINR was nothing less than 20 dB.
Oh,
and I had a 15 megabit round, up and down on the LTE connection.
That assumes that the cell site has a good backbone connection, and not everyone does, right?
Yeah. Well, believe it or not, most cell sites have a backbone that's really robust, because if you're running LTE, have to have it. There's no two ways about it. Now, if you're in a major city or urban area, most likely the backbone is where it should be. If you're in a rural area that doesn't have a lot of businesses around, maybe there's a good chance you're on a backbone that's probably half of where it should be. But again, it's based on location. So since we were in a suburban area,
How do you get those two readings? I've got an app on my phone that tells me a lot about whatever cell site I'm connected to and others that are around it. I'll look for those numbers. I've seen RSSI. I don't think I've noticed SINR yet. And thanks for explaining how that works. How do you determine that?
Well, every device is different. In the case of the MiFi, I have my little MiFi Wi-Fi bot, puck. You could go into the software and it shows you on the newer version, the Netgear version that I think Verizon's using a lot of. You can actually do on the touchscreen. There's a touchscreen on it, and you scroll to the about. You click on about. It gives you the serial number, the whole bit, and then you go next, next, and that gives you the actual parameters of the RF component. And right there, it tells you right there. You can look at those two elements. Now, if you're using the Cradlepoint router with the Pantech USB modem, you can go into the Cradlepoint router and look at Connection Manager, click on that, and then you can see status, that is, and you can see the exact same information. And you'll know right away if your cellular connection is going to work or not. That's the first thing you do when you get on site. And then you find a spot that works. Another trick, USB extension cable, a heavy-duty one, not those little thin ones, a nice shielded thick one you can get, costs you about $20. And that can extend your Pantech modem, if you're using that one, or another brand, near a window. Get close to a window so you're closest to the outside.
Sure, sure.
And then look at your readings again.
I'm looking here, and my office, this studio, is in my basement. So I'm always on Wi-Fi when I'm down here. But my cellular readings here are really awful. There's my signal strength, minus 118. And then it looks like they're calling it RSSNR dB. And it's like -3, -4.
Yeah. So that's most likely you're not going to get much. Your data rate's going to be really low.
The data rate is really low. Of course, I'm on Wi-Fi, so it's fantastic. But I'll look at those numbers when I'm in a much, much better spot. Hey, this would make a great subject for an upcoming show. Let's gather together, how to read these numbers on various devices. This is an app that I have called Network Cell Info Lite. And there's a paid version as well that doesn't have ads, may give you more information. So I'd love to share that kind of information with other engineers so that they can quickly determine if they've got any kind of an RF or if they have a good chance of getting a good data rate or not based on location, and maybe they can move the location to get a better signal and less of the SINR
you get
a better SINR.
What you're basically trying to do is minimize the signal to noise interference, which causes interference with the data rates. What do you call it? Yeah, I just call it data rates for now, but there's another term for it. Yeah. And it's all part of the LTE spec. So whether it's AT&T, Verizon, Sprint, Cellular One, Orange, or OB2, they have to follow the same thing. They may name it something different, but they all have to follow a similar plan. And that's how you know. And that's part of the resource block allocation. That's the other part of LTE that you have to understand.
So we got David Bialik with us, and David always gives us a preview of the AES show. Now, at AES, there's a lot of different – there's all different kinds of realms or disciplines in the audio world, AES Audio Engineering Society. And they are a group. They are a society of people of all different disciplines in audio. And, of course, one of those is broadcasters. And so there's a track of panels, meetings, instruction for – the broadcast and streaming track. Now, this is different than gaming audio or movie audio, but I talked to David Bialik, and he's going to share some of the highlights of the upcoming track, and then Chris and I will be back with a final word in just a few minutes. We're here with David Bialik. He is the chairman of the broadcast and streaming track at the AES convention, and he is, I guess, every year. This year, the AES is in Los Angeles. David, I just found out I get to be out there this year, so I'm looking forward to seeing you and hopefully sitting in on a couple of the sessions you're going to describe here. Good morning. Oh, by the way, hello. Welcome in.
Thank you, Kirk. The convention runs from September 29th through October 2nd. It's a Thursday through Sunday at the L.A. Convention Center. Mm-hmm. I want to invite anybody that is interested in audio, and for my session specifically, broadcast or streaming audio. The sessions are going to be great. We have 11 sessions that are phenomenal, and they start early in the morning at 9 in the morning. I know that no engineer in his right mind wants to do anything at 9 in the morning.
But now a lot of folks are coming from the East Coast and Central U.S. where I am. This is noon to our bodies. It's not bad. It's actually a little bit of a vacation. I get to sleep in a little bit compared to normal.
So you think.
Okay. So what happens at 9 a.m. on the 29th?
I got immersive audio absorbing radio and TV audiences in 2016 and beyond, and that's being put together by John Storick, who's a celebrated acoustician. He designed Electric Lady and a whole bunch of facilities all over the world. And he's got a panel with Brian Long, Bob Margoloff, who used to produce Stevie Wonder, and Matt Maron and Chris Polonis, and they're going to talk about how to properly design the studio for when you have to monitor and mix 5.1, 7.1, surround. Who knows? Maybe we'll go back to quad. all this stuff. So that's going to be a great opener. And usually when John does that session at 9 in the morning, it's usually packed and standing room only.
By the way, speaking of you know, quad, I just ran across an advertisement today for a totally remixed CD set of Chicago and their music, and it includes quad mixes. So hey, quad's not dead.
No, quad's not dead. It was actually 5.1 before it does lose 1.1 of it.
Yeah, exactly. All right, what's next on the track?
Okay, we have Listener Fatigue and Retention, and this session is put together by Marvin Caesar, the former owner and founder of Aphex Systems. And you have a great panel again, Bruce Botnick, John Gavin, who's an audiologist, Scott Gershon, Thomas Lund from Genelec, and Thomas Sporer from Fraunhofer. And they're going to talk about how to engage the listener and not make it fatiguing.
Important, yes, yep.
Very important, and hopefully someone will listen to what they have to say. We've run this session now. It's probably almost 20 years since Marvin and I came up with the concept of having this session, and it's only gotten more and more popular. Then there's the opening ceremonies at AES, and right after the opening ceremonies, we have a joint session that I put together for AES and the Society of Motion Picture Television Engineers. It's called Television and Movies, the Evolution of Audio and Sound, a Look Back in the Moments That Matter. And on this panel, we have Brian Vessa, Corey Bailey, Ed Green, and Mark King. And it's going to be talking about television and movie mixing, whether it's live or for later. And it's going to be really good. And even though I know a lot of your audience is in radio, it's always good to know what television's doing.
Well, I think you can learn skills that help you in radio, and especially with so many radio stations doing live performance studios and live mixes. Can be very helpful.
Exactly, and the capturing of dialogue is a very important.
Yeah.
It's a lost art. Radio has forgotten it, and television has picked it up. Then after that, we have immersive and object-oriented audio playback in the home. Okay, what is going on in the home now? It's not just two speakers anymore. People have surround rooms. You have 5.1, you have 22.2 in some houses. I mean, I don't have a wife that would allow that, but...
Yeah, I was going to say, 22.2, maybe in the man cave.
I was lucky to get 5.1, but that's okay. And there's what's going on there and what's going to be happening in the future in the home. Dave Wilson from the Consumer Technology Association is going to be chairing that, and he's got a great panel there as well. Then on Friday, September 30th, another television session, but it's really important, audio considerations for 4K and 8K television. Okay, we've just really accepted ATSC and stereo and so forth. Now we're talking 4K and 8K TV, and Fred Willard from Univision is chairing that panel, and he's got a great panel there. Roger Charlesworth from the DTV Group, Bob Margoloff again, Matt Maron, Kazuhu Ono from NHK, Skip Peasy from NAB, and Peter Pors. It's going to be a phenomenal session. And then, this is a highlight of the convention. At 1 o'clock, there's going to be an interview with Bob Orban. I know he's a competitor of yours, but no one can dispute that the man's a legend. And Greg Oganowski, his former partner and good friend, is going to interview Bob about all of the stuff Bob has done and what he's looking to do. And it's got to be fascinating, considering – I don't know if you've ever spoken with Bob off the record. But
we've had him on the Torch Show before, yeah.
The man has more war stories and also all the stories, because this is the man that took audio in radio leaps and bounds. Before this, we were lucky to have the Volumax and Automax and tri-band processing. Suddenly, he introduced the Optimon with the 8100 and revolutionized broadcast audio. So we
have the interview with Bob, and Greg Oganowski will conduct. We've had Greg on the show, too, so two Tort veterans will be talking to each other on the stage. That'll be interesting. What's next?
Audio for over-the-top television.
Oh.
This is really a new medium for us, because over-the-top TV is here. You have people have Roku, Netflix, Apple TV, and so forth. So it's a panel of Skip Peasy from NAB is moderating that. And it's going to also talk about the new guidelines that the AES is going to be releasing at the show, hopefully. I highly suggest everybody come to that. It's going to be really interesting. And the AES is going to be releasing guidelines from the Broadcast and Online Delivery Technical Committee. I can guarantee that it's going to happen, because I happen to be one of the chairs of that committee.
Cool. All right.
Then on Saturday, we have Designing, Building, and Maintaining a Radio Station Performance Space.
Oh, yeah. A lot of stations are doing this. Sure.
Listen to this lineup. You got Lynn Duke of K-Rock. Gary Klein, the former head engineer from Cumulus. Tracy Teagarden from CBS LA Las Vegas, I'm sorry.
Yeah, Las Vegas.
And Andrew Stern from Cumulus San Francisco.
Hmm.
K-Fog and all those.
Yeah.
These guys have built some of the greatest radio performance spaces, and they're going to talk about how to maintain it, how to build it, and how to integrate it in. And as Tracy says, he has to take his space and not only use it for a performance space, but it also has to be a meeting room. It has to be a presentation room for sales. So he has to multi-purpose it. So it's a really interesting concept, and it's really timely since so many radio stations are doing this now. Then, after that, implementing IP wiring for audio applications. Our old friend Steve Lampin is going to be running a this panel with Kevin Gross, Dan Mortensen, Tony Petterle, and Tim Poser. And it's talking about audio and IP. Someone like you who's from Telos is very familiar with.
So cool. So many of the people that you're mentioning have been guests on the Tort Show. So this is great. It makes me feel good. I think I'm maybe picking the right people to be guests on the show. So this is awesome. Now you can hear them on a panel talking about a specific subject.
Okay. And then there's going to be a big session on the DTV audio group is having a session on the changing face of television audio objects, immersivity, and personalization. And Roger Charlesworth is putting that together, which is going to be great. And after that, considerations for podcast audio.
Oh, I hear a lot of bad audio on podcasts. Not so much on this podcast, although, occasionally it happens.
Rob Byers of NPR is putting that together, and he has a really great panel. And I think every radio broadcaster should attend this session because
– Oh, what you learn here is definitely applicable to, you know, your own radio station. And I'll bet they've got some great ideas on how to do it right, but also perhaps how to save money here and there and still get the great results. So good that they're doing that.
And then we have something that's going to be really cool on Sunday. At lunchtime, I fought to get it at lunchtime because I did not want to have to say to anybody, you have to wake up at 9 in the morning on Sunday. listen to this. At 11 o'clock, we have the whole sound crew from Fox's Grease Live come in to talk about how they mixed that, because they took over half the sound stages of Paramount Studios to perform that live on TV, and the audio was pretty good, and it was in surround. It was, and Mark King is, who mixed it. I got him to put together all of his crew, or at least most of his crew, and they're going to talk about everything from when they faded from black on up, and it's going to be really cool.
Now, is this the kind of production where almost every performer is wearing a wireless mic?
They were all wearing wireless mics, yeah.
Yeah, like a big Broadway production.
This was bigger than Broadway because you had multiple stages. And you, if you saw that production, I mean, it's not the sort of show I would normally watch, and I have to thank my wife for forcing me to watch it with her. It was really great.
Same boat, yeah, for me.
It was really a great production, and the sound was very good. So I think it's something that everyone can learn from.
Yeah, that would be fascinating. You said this is bigger than a Broadway. I've seen some Broadway productions that I thought they got 50 wireless mics on the stage, and how do they handle mixing that? And the sound was just superb.
And remember, so they only had the commercial breaks to switch stages.
Oh wow! All right, good. So that's on Sunday at noon.
Yeah, and those are the broadcast and streaming sessions.
Good deal. So if people want more information on this or to see a specific calendar to plan their time or even just plan their trip to L.A., I'm planning mine almost last minute. I didn't know until a couple days ago that I was going to AES, and glad I will be. Where do people need to go for more information?
www.aes.org.
Okay, and then I guess there's a big banner for the – which convention number is this, 140-something?
This is the 141st.
Ah, okay, 141st convention of the AES.
I've been doing this for a little while. I'm now into my third decade of chairing the broadcast and streaming sessions.
Oh, man.
Which originally started as the broadcast sessions.
Okay. Well, good deal. Well, we'll see you there at AES.org, www.aes.org, and look for the broadcast and streaming sessions.
One thing that you should know is – as many people are SBE certified and they have to attend, classes or stuff to maintain their certifications and things.
Yeah.
Attending the technical program of AES, it does qualify. I've spoken many times with John Poiret about this, and he's told me yes, it does qualify. So, and if people have ideas for future AES shows, they should see me. I mean, it's not definite that I'm doing the next show, but let's face it, I've done it the last 30 years, so I'm someone who can't say no.
Probably make it 31. By the way, I understand there's a little ceremony that you're going to be part of, getting some kind of an honorary award. What is that about?
At the opening ceremonies, I am going to be awarded the Board of Governors Award. Last year, you might remember, I mean, Twerk did probably the most phenomenal show they ever did, where we had the light show on Empire State Building, and
yeah,
we celebrated the Master Antenna's 50th anniversary,
yeah,
and you did the show from the top of the Monarch. I'm getting an award for planning all that, and it probably was the most publicized event AES has ever had, and it was a lot of fun, but boy, was that a lot of work.
You know, it was amazing, and for those viewers watching this interview who didn't get to see that, I'll put a link in the show notes so you can see not only – well, you can – a link to the previous episode where we had – the people, the various engineers and people speaking about the Empire State Building, but also a link to the video of the light show, which was phenomenal.
Yes, that sort of is the event that's haunting me for the rest of my life now.
And to think that there you were in the basement of the Empire State Building, flipping those lights on and off so fast to make it go along with the music. That's the real talent. I wish I had video of you flipping those light switches.
There is a video of me hitting the big switch, though.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. David, thank you so much for joining us. And anything else before we have to run?
No. I hope to see you at AES. And if anyone has a suggestion, they can always email me at broadcast@aes.org. And I will always try to help someone. Last year at the convention, we had a really nice moment. And a young broadcast engineer from Uganda got a hold of me, and he wanted to find out more about SBE certification and so forth. And I was able to help him get a hold of SBE and so forth. And he wrote me from Uganda that he is now a CBNT, and he plans to come back to AES, and I think it's great when we can help people.
That's awesome. Very good. And that's what it's all about, is getting information out there and helping the next generation of people, and even the current generation, learn the skills.
And I want to congratulate you on being reelected to the SBE board.
Oh, thank you. I have to thank the people that voted for me. It's just great.
And I think it's great that you were able to run for election and not promise to build a wall or anything.
No, I promise to tear down this wall.
Okay.
David, thank you so much for joining us, and I'll see you in Los Angeles in just a few weeks. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye. You are watching or listening to This Week in Radio Tech. It's our 317th episode. I'm Kirk Harnack, along with Chris Tobin. Chris has a fantastic tip for you coming up, and actually I've got one too coming up in just a minute. All right, our show is brought to you in part by the folks at Lavo. You know, everywhere you go, you find touchscreens. I mean, everywhere. There's your smartphone and tablet, of course, and supermarket checkouts have touchscreens. Laptops come with them, and so do the radios in new cars. I was just playing with one yesterday. I don't have one in my car yet, but I sat in a beautiful new Dodge Charger yesterday, and it was amazing. You know, even airplane cockpits have touchscreens. Well, their intuitive controls help you finish tasks faster. That's why we use them, with fewer errors. And isn't it time you brought the power of touchscreen to your radio studio? Well, you can, with the Crystal Clear Virtual Radio Console from Lavo. Crystal Clear gives talent an instantly understandable multi-touch interface. Faders and meters and clocks and timers and talkback and more, well, they all live in harmony on a single screen, so shows run smoother and they actually do sound better. Crystal Clear features Lavo's exclusive Auto Mix. That's the hands-free smart mixing algorithm designed for fast-paced multi-mic talk shows, and Auto Gain. Now, you just speak into the microphone and the preamp calibrates automatically while your guest speaks into the mic. And with so much advanced automation, your talent can dock those mixing controls off to the side and then use the screen to do other things. That's right. And that sounds crazy. Hey, put the mixer off to the side. But you know what? That Auto Mix is just amazing. And you can just go ahead and do the stuff you really want to do. Put the stuff on the air that you want, like working with delivery systems and audio editors or phones. Crystal Clear's power plant measures just one rack unit tall. And that's pretty amazing when you consider the amount of DSP on board, compression, EQ, voice processing, and precision delay. They can all be applied to all of your mic, your line level, and your digital sources. They have some optional upgrades with Crystal Clear if you need them, if you want them. For example, redundant power, MADI, Ravenna, and AES-67. Now, all that power costs no more than you'd spend for an ordinary audio console. So if you're thinking about a new console, don't decide before you check out Crystal Clear from Lavo. You want to go to www.lavo, that's L-A-W-O, .com, Lavo.com. Read about it or call Bill Bennett. I just met Bill today, actually, at the Nashville SBE meeting. He's at Lavo USA. You can call him at 888-810-4468. That's 888-810-4468 in the U.S. to find out more. The future is clear. It's Lavo Crystal Clear. And thanks to Lavo for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. All right, Chris. Thanks for hanging on in that interview. Oh, you're not going to AES, are you? That's in L.A. this year.
No, there's a schedule conflict. I can't. That weekend I have other things to do. So, yeah, I'm going to have to miss it.
I didn't think I was going until earlier this week. I talked to some my boss at Telos, and they said, you're going. You're going to AES. So I'm going to be glad. In fact, I get to go there and basically represent the Telos Alliance at the Media Networking Alliance. So we get to tell people about how AES 67 makes lots of things talk to each other. And I really relish doing that. I love telling people how, you know, how this glue works. So get to go out there.
It's quite sticky, but it's good.
Yeah, it is. So do you have a tip for us this week, something we might walk away with and use?
Yes, I have two tips. They work hand in hand. But before I forget, the gentleman that David was talking about from Uganda, it's Timothy. He's a certified broadcast network engineer. I'm looking at his I was with David when Timothy was trying to get the SBE certification worked out. So he and I were talking, and every so often I get an email from him when he's got things going on. So Timothy is at the Uganda Institute of Information and Communications Technology. So congratulations again, and all the best. Continued success with what you're working on. So
is this, I don't know if I'm saying his last name right. Is this Tim Kyobe?
Yeah, I didn't want to say his last name. But Okay.
I'm sorry. I just did. I wanted to see if it's the same guy. I know Tim. He's my buddy on Facebook. Sure.
Yeah. So I just wanted to make sure it was understood who it was. He gets the proper credit because he did work hard and he came to New York. He came to the show for the certification. That's the backstory.
Gotcha.
So, just to let everybody know. But so moving right along and for the tips, two things. One, I may have said this before, but maybe not. Something I do quite often, and it's a very simple investment. At your transmitter sites, two things. One, leave a spare charger for your cell phone there, charger and cable.
Yeah.
Don't get crazy. Just buy the $10 version at some drugstore or whatever, pharmacist. Put it there and leave it there in a little plastic bag so it's somewhat protected from the environment. And that way, when you get to the site at 2 o'clock in the morning and you realize, oh, my phone didn't get charged because I got home late and had to leave again, now you can put it on charge. Second thing to do, and consider this very important, a lot of cellular companies now are providing what they call it's an offloading technique where they will work with the local Wi-Fi connection and your cell phone. So an incoming or outgoing calls actually goes across your Wi-Fi. Why do I say this? Because how many of us work at transmitter sites where the cellular service might just be a little questionable, or you're lucky enough to have a cell site at your location and you subscribe to that carrier? Doesn't happen all the time. So what I've been doing is I put in little Wi-Fi hotspots in the transmitter site and password it a whole bit. But then I get there, pop my phone on Wi-Fi, and now I have a sure connection for email, messages, and those phone calls. And it works really well, this concept. So just food for thought. I actually use it at one of the buildings I have a transmitter site at, and it works great between two floors. I've actually had people look at me like, how are you making that phone call? I can't get service. I'm like, there's a little trick. Can't tell you that. It's a trade secret. So those are the tips. do the charger. Make sure it's a charger you can separate the cable from. Why? Because maybe you need to connect your phone to your computer at the site for something.
Yeah.
So there's
that's
three
a
tips.
Great idea. you could go to eBay. Stuff on Amazon tends to be, there's a guarantee. So, you know, if you order four or five of them, if you cover several sites, just order a bunch of them, spend $30.
Every site you're at. I mean, like, you go to a pharmacy store, like a Duane Reade, Walgreens, or Piggly Wiggly, and you can buy these things at the, you know, right at the counter. They're cheap enough. It's well cheap worth one. It. I can't tell you how many times I've been at a site where somebody comes knocking on my door and goes, would you happen to have a phone charger? My phone's dead. I'm like, just so happens that I do. But you have to stay in this room with it because I'm not letting it out of my sight.
That's a great idea because you'd be at the transmitter site, need to use that phone, and you're miles from anywhere. And
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Great idea. All right. Hey, I've got a thank you for both tips. Now, on the Wi-Fi tip, now, was that something new for you and your carrier, using the Wi-Fi?
The carrier is Sprint, and they've been Sprint. Verizon, I think, now dabbles in it. But Sprint started doing it about a year ago, 2 years ago. I forget what they call it. There's a name for it. It's offloading, but there's an industry term. So if you turn the Wi-Fi on and the cellular service is weak, the phone knows to use the cell service, the Wi-Fi, to get the connection that you need.
Yeah. Well,
it works great.
I've been with T-Mobile for 13 years or so. And T-Mobile started doing this years ago before anybody else did. And I always thought that was – well, T-Mobile did it maybe because they didn't have very many towers and they wanted to provide more service. And I call it OPB, other people's bandwidth.
Yes, you can do that too.
Oh. That's the Herc Kirk term, OPB. But yeah, I've been doing that for years on T-Mobile, and I was surprised. In fact, I guess my wife has an iPhone, and the iPhone on T-Mobile wouldn't do that until maybe a couple of years ago. You couldn't substitute Wi-Fi.
Some cellular companies, I think, they were trying to decide whether they wanted to charge it as a feature, an option, or just give it out. There was some talk about that. That was back when T-Mobile was – that's how you fill in the gaps. We have cellular coverage. Yeah. It's not where it should be. Yeah. That's exactly what they're doing.
I use it all the time. Although I got to tell you, one annoyance that comes about is if you are – if like an Xfinity hotspot is one of your automatic connection things, any hotspot that requires you to sign in, that's a pain. You've got to forget those and not let it try to roam to those because it'll get stuck. It'll say – well, hey, I'm connected to Wi-Fi, but you got to log in. Well, I don't want that. If you're not going to do it by yourself, then don't bother me with it. And these companies, whether it's Starbucks, Xfinity, or others that are nationwide, I understand Boing Boing does sign in automatically because there's an app running, but they need to have automatic sign-in. So once you sign in once, I agree to your terms of service. Do that once, and then let me sign in automatically. They need to fix that problem. Yeah.
Right. And with Sprint, Sprint's called Wi-Fi calling. That's the feature. Wi-Fi calling to make and receive calls over Wi-Fi with your, in this case, Sprint account.
Whenever I'm here at the house, you saw how bad my cell service is, right? Because I'm in the basement here. I tell it to prefer Wi-Fi here at the house, so it always does. Yeah. Cool. Hey, real quick, my tip is if you want to get some education on these very popular products from Ubiquiti, like their cameras and their edge routers and their edge switches and their IP radios, there's a YouTube channel, a guy named Willie Howe. Willie is W-I-L-L-I-E and Howe, H-O-W-E. And check out Willie Howe. Subscribe to his channel and lots of videos, new ones there pretty often on how to best use and set up Ubiquiti gear. We got to go. This show thread number 317, a lot of people to thank. We'll put them all in the show notes. And thanks very much to Suncast for producing the show and to Andrew Zarian, founder of the GFQ Network. Chris Tobin, thank you for being here. I sure appreciate it, dude.
Yeah, no problem. Anytime. I had a good time. I enjoyed it.
Next Thursday, I think, if I can get the bandwidth, I'll be coming to you live from Amsterdam in the IBC show. It'll be late at night there, but it'll be 5 o'clock Eastern time here.
It's a great show. I wish I could be there.
I just hope the hotel has the bandwidth.
Oh, I'm sure they do.
If they don't, maybe I'll find a coffee shop that does.
There you go. Nice.
Yeah. Okay. We'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye, everybody.